Good morning and welcome to Words That Matter, a modern day book club. I'm your host, Lee Smith, and this morning we have a really terrific show, very interesting show, which you're going to see is going to affect the outcome, not the show, but the subject matter of the show is certainly going to affect the outcome of the 2024 election and has already affected not only elections, but the way we live. The author is Scott Walter. Welcome, Scott. The book is Arabella. I've got advanced copy here. Very excited to have it. Very excited to read it. Arabella, the dark money network of leftist billionaires secretly transforming America. The author is Scott Walter, and Scott is the president of Capital Research Center, former George W. Bush administration official as well. Scott, thank you so much for being here with us today on Words That Matter. Welcome and congratulations.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you, Lee.
Thanks. So, Arabella, this is the name of an institution that many of us are surprised to hear, will be surprised to hear, plays such a large role in our political life. Can you explain what Arabella is?
Sure. Arabella itself, Arabella Advisors, is a for-profit consulting company that created for itself half a dozen nonprofits. And this whole big network takes in billions of dollars every election cycle and is a player in pretty much every single issue in American politics, even though hardly anybody has heard of it.
Yeah. How did they manage to keep that concealed for so long? And then how did you uncover it? How did you find out who they were and what they were up to?
Well, how they concealed it, of course, was easy. Who was going to find it? The mainstream media? I think not. So the fun story, there is a great origin story of this book, which is a Senate Judiciary Committee friend called me up one day and said, this was back in the Brett Kavanaugh Brett Kavanaugh had not even been named as the nominee. We just knew there was going to be a vacancy on the court. Republicans at the time controlled the Senate. So, of course, the left pounced and started attacking the Judiciary Committee and the president and anybody that might be nominated, right? They literally had pre-printed signs for half a dozen or more of the possible nominees. So the person calls me from Judiciary Committee saying, there's something called demand justice that's all over radio, TV, online, that's attacking all of us. We don't even have a nominee yet. We've never heard of it. What is it? So we discovered that it was a brand new group set up, of course, with George Soros money. And it was going to be attacking every judicial nominee that the administration made. Now, we kept digging, though. Beyond that, we discovered, well, actually, the group doesn't really exist as an independent nonprofit. It is just a fiscally sponsored project of something called the 1630 Fund. Now, there had been a tiny little bit of press coverage of the 1630 Fund because it was already a huge player in American politics as a 501c4 group. That's the sort of politicized nonprofits like League of Conservation Voters or National Rifle Association. But what we kept digging, though, and we discovered, well, wait a minute, 1630 Fund is not something by itself. It is one of a half dozen nonprofits run by this for-profit Arabella Advisors outfit. So that's the origin story.
Wow. How does Arabella... Okay, so on the cover of the book, you've got, several notorious figures here. From left to right, Bill Gates, in the center, George Soros, and on the right, Mark Zuckerberg. How does it work? How does it take how does Arabella take the money of the leftist billionaire class and use them? I mean, I guess one of the things we're curious to know is what does the network look like and how does it operate? I mean, actual and real sort of graph terms. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it?
Sure.
You have the billionaires on the top, and then people are just taking the money and sort of milking the money into big cans that gets distributed around to the left wing ecosystem. And forgive me for mixing tons of metaphors here, but it's just good to get a picture of how it works.
So let's first just look at the organization within Arabella's network. I think the easiest way to grasp it is to think of a pyramid, right? At the apex, you have that Arabella Advisors for profit. In the mid-level of the pyramid, you have the half dozen nonprofits. I call them umbrella nonprofits because they don't go out on their own and do anything. They operate through the base of the pyramid, which is hundreds, more than 500 fake groups like Demand Justice. And as I said, hundreds more. Those are the things that you're going to see in your Facebook ad or paying for state ballot initiative fights, things like that. Okay. So that's the internal structure. Now, the way it works for a billionaire is, or some other mega donor, you walk through the offices of Arabella Advisors and you tell them something like, you know, I want to fight on abortion, or I want to take over North Carolina for the Democrats. They immediately are able to say, okay, look, we are going to pop up for you a matching pair of a C4 nonprofit, like, as I said, League of Conservation Voters type thing, and a matching C3, that's a charity, legally speaking, which can't be as involved in politics, but can take money from foundations and donor-advised funds, so comes in handy on the fundraising side. We're going to give you this matched pair. And by the way, you don't have to wait for our lawyers to incorporate that in Delaware and then wait months for the IRS to recognize your new groups. No, no. These new groups will just be fiscally sponsored projects of our umbrella nonprofits. So by the end of the day, you walk in the morning and the afternoon, you can have websites and new accounting codes at Arabella for this money to then go do whatever particular project you like.
Okay, can I just ask one question here? Fascinating, by the way. This is a fascinating picture. When you say Arabella is for profit, that means that they're, okay, say I'm a prominent leftist billionaire, and I walk in and I say, as you said, I want to take over North Carolina for the left. I want kids wearing Mao jackets in schools or Mao caps in schools. So what can you do? So that's the for-profit end. Arabella is billing me when I walk in the door and saying, here's what I want. That's the for-profit part?
Not quite. And again, I apologize. As you say, it's a Byzantine, not simple thing.
Right.
So let's finish our story, right?
Okay.
You're the rich guy or the foundation.
Okay.
Walked through the door and they're going to set up your little matching pair of C3, C4. And here's the way it's going to work. You are going to write checks to one of those half dozen umbrella nonprofits. For the C3, you'll probably write it to something called the New Venture Fund, right? That's what your check will be. And it'll say for North Carolina project on the memo line, right? And then for the C4 side, you probably write it to the 1630 fund that Demand Justice was created under. And you write a check to them. And on the memo line, you'll say, you know, North Carolina project. Then what happens, legally speaking, is those two nonprofits start doing the work that you want. And they use Arabella to manage themselves and run themselves, which is to say, Arabella, the for-profit, bills those two nonprofits that got your money. And then when I come out and tell exactly what's going on in, say, the Wall Street Journal, the Wall Street Journal gets a letter to the editor from Arabella going, oh, no, 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 no. We're just a simple little tiny, boring back office thing. And the clients are in control. The New Venture Fund's in control. The 1630 Fund's in control. We just, I don't know, like, you know, hire the janitors and, you know, maybe run the payroll or something. That's all.
Is this, I imagine it's relatively legal, or is it? What sort of, you know, what sort of issues does it raise, though?
This general outline that I described to you is itself legal in principle. Now, there is a continuing lawsuit that is going to be very exciting. It's you know, all lawsuits take forever to wind through our courts, but there's a fascinating lawsuit. A black woman who's a former employee of Arabella, well, sorry, of part of the network, it's Network World. She has a lawsuit going against multiple parts of the Arabella world, and a judge just got it over the first big hump, which is, you know, Arabella's lawyers trying to have the whole thing dismissed out of hand. So now we're going to be in discovery phase. But the documents that have already come out in that lawsuit show that in this case, they had, it would seem that they had one of their C3 groups actually running, overseeing and running a C4 group. That's not very kosher because C3s can't be as political as the C4s.
Okay. So what? So you, will this case be helpful in unveiling more and more of what Arabella, more and more of what Arabella does? Or do you think that this is really capable of stopping Arabella in its tracks?
Oh, I don't, you know, I wouldn't get my hopes up that high just because they have billions, right? But people with billions of dollars in inertia are not stopped easily. It might, however, lessen the kinds of abuses that we see.
How did it start? Who put this idea together? I mean, it seems unique. I mean, there's nothing else like this. So who came up with this idea?
There are a couple of other places that have something similar to this. In one case, there's a conservative network of nonprofits, not nearly as rich as Arabella, or as around for as long. But they've read our work on how this is, you know, on that arrangement I explained, and they said, well, gosh, that makes things a lot easier. So we're going to set up that way. But it started in 2005. It was started by a trust fund baby, you could say, started by a 20-something kid whose parents had a big auto parts company. And they sold it for, I believe it was around $750 million. So he's beginning to get into philanthropy that way and ends up making it a career. Now, the thing to understand, right, you always have to understand people's religion. And in this case, the religion was environmentalism. And when he was an undergraduate, he was radicalized by this environmental guru. Now, the guru was not some fringe, obscure character. This is a guy who had run the Sierra Club for years. In fact, had so radicalized that it lost its tax-exempt status. And he'd started other enviro groups like Friends of the Earth, Earth Island Institute, and League of Conservation Voters, which to this day still puts a lot of money into the Arabella world. So you could say the founder, Eric Kessler, had this come to Gaia moment as an undergraduate. He was so enraptured by this enviro guru that he hitchhiked from Colorado to San Francisco to work for him. Right. And the thing about the guru, though, is these environmentalists can be just wacko, right? This guy, when he was at Friends of the Earth, put out a big fat book in the mid-70s. And Lee, you're old enough to remember what the environmental apocalypse of the 70s was going to be, right?
Sure.
Population bombs going to explode. We're all going to die in famine, right? So the first chapter in this book is about population, and it raises some fascinating ideas, like maybe the government should make it illegal to have children unless the government gives you a license. Oh, wait, maybe that's not enough. Maybe the government should force everybody childbearing age to take contraceptives. And then if you get your license, they'll give you the antidote so you can have a child. Now, that's bananas. But that is the guy who radicalized this young trust fund kid who starts this giant network.
Is Eric Kessler still around? Is he still running Arabella?
He no longer is on he used to be on the boards of almost all those umbrella, half dozen umbrella nonprofits. He's now sort of semi-retired. And the final ownership is complicated, right? Because there's like holding companies. And so who can be quite certain? He's not gone, but he's not as day-to-day involved with the operations.
I have to credit you again, Scott. You heard me laugh, but a come to gay a moment. That's pretty good. I don't know if you've used that elsewhere. If you just broke it out here first, that was pretty great. Scott Walter, author of Arabella, The Dark Money Network of Leftist Billionaires Secretly Transforming America. We're going to take a quick break. If you're watching on YouTube, we're cutting away to Epoch TV exclusively. Make sure you make the jump with us, because in the second half, I want to ask Scott, we're going to lead off right with this. How is Arabella shaping the environment for the 2024 election? So something for all of us to be looking out for. And that's what we're going to be speaking with Scott about when we come back in less than a minute. So make sure you make the jump with us and come back to Words That Matter, a Modern Day Book Club.
Today's recession playbook basically has two big pieces to it. One of them is government spending. So you got to ramp up government spending to prime the pump on the economy is the logic. And the other one is that you have to lower interest rates. So the Fed brings interest rates as close as possible to zero. So the idea is that companies are going to borrow a lot of money, they're going to invest, and then we're going to get the economy growing again. And what they did in the 1920 depression was kind of by accident, the exact opposite. So they cut government spending and they raised interest rates. You know, within 1 year, we went from something that was much worse than the depression to soaring economy. That then ushered in the roaring 20s. Okay, they had budget surpluses all through the 1920s. It was just astounding.
Welcome back to Words That Matter, a Modern Day Book Club. Thanks for making the jump. I'm your host, Lee Smith. We're in the middle of a great conversation with Scott Walter, author of the new book, Arabella. Scott, so as I left it before we went to our brief break, I want to know, what are the kinds of things that Arabella is doing now? How are they shaping the environment? You talked about that. I mean, the introduction starts talking about, again, before Donald J. Trump even nominates Brett Kavanaugh, how an Arabella group is already involved. So right now, with the 2024 election 7 months away, what are the different ways that Arabella is working on the elections, helping to shape the elections, shape the vote?
Sure. The rule of thumb for all questions about the Arabella Network is the answer to any question, everything, right? Which is just now. I'll rattle a few off. So, Demand Justice, by the way, Demand Justice has helped to pick Biden's judges, including Ketanji Brown Jackson. It not only had somebody inside the White House Counsel Office, it also, you know, who came from Demand Justice? You may have heard of her name, Jen Psaki. Of course, she's now influencing the election by pretending to be a journalist, sort of. There's another way they're trying to influence things, right? The left is desperately trying to influence the Supreme Court. Lynn. And I told you have those matching pairs of C4 and C3 nonprofits. Well, yeah. Demand Justice was a C4. Its C3 sister was something called Fix the Court, which is pounding every day, attacking the Supreme Court, smearing Clarence Thomas and others, getting taken seriously by the New York Times and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse and whatnot. That's yet another. Abortion, they're one of the biggest abortion funders in the election. Obviously, abortion is going to be a big factor this year. And that's mostly, by the way, Warren Buffett's money, tens of millions of dollars every year running through Arabella. And the yet another thing they're doing is they were mixed up in Zuckbucks in 2020. Sure. And nobody knew this, including us, until a year after the election, even though we were ground zero for reporting on what was going on with Zuckbucks. But a year after the election, when Arabella's nonprofits finally had to file their IRS disclosures, what do we discover? But the main C3 charity that got around $350 million of Zuck's bucks also got $25 million from Arabella's biggest charity. And they haven't stopped there. That charity is still going strong, trying to infiltrate local government election offices and manipulate them. And Arabella has two different groups, Institute for Responsive Government and Center for Secure and Modern Elections. It's classic DC, you know, BS. Who's against secure and modern elections? Who's against responsive government, right?
Right. Who's against transparency? Who's against democracy? Right. Look, what are the different ways? What are the different ways in which the opposition is the opposition aware of what's going on? Another way to ask that is, what's the response to your book in professional political circles in Washington, D.C. on the right? Are people like, yes, thank you, Scott, for documenting all of this right here? Arabella, the dark money network of leftist billionaires secretly transforming America, and we're on it. We've got all sorts of different things in the work. We're contesting demand justice. We'll fix the courts, rig the vote, whatever they have going. We're working on all of it. What is the opposition saying?
Well, I will say that over the last few years, thanks to the massive reporting that my team and I have done, more and more people are understanding this, but still, it isn't nearly as widely or deeply understood as it needs to be. And the other thing is, as you pointed out early, right, on the surface, most of this is basically legal under the jungle of wild laws that our various nonprofit types function under, right? So it's not like it's a simple, like, person A bribed politician B.
Right.
It's not as simple as that. Now, I will say, though, one of the worst things about Arabella is that one of its biggest donors, almost from day one, is a Swiss foreign national, Hans-Jürg, right? He is another Soros. The left has a lot of Soroses. There's not just Mr. Soros himself, lots of Soroses. He's one. He has given hundreds of millions of dollars into Arabella's network. And there are efforts, for instance, to say that C4 nonprofits that get money from foreign sources can't play in politics, like giving money to super PACs. That's one thing that's been suggested. Another, speaking of Zuckbucks, Claudia Tenney, congresswoman from New York, has a bill that would say if you're a C3 group, you just can't do voter registration because that's, we all know that's not really a charitable activity the way that it's done today. So there are some efforts like that. State attorneys general are another group that could try to look into this in their state.
Are they? Do you think state attorney generals are on it?
There haven't been many. The Louisiana, I will give extra credit to the Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry, who now recently became the governor, but he sued Arabella and that charity that got most of the Zuckbucks all the way back in 2020. Again, that lawsuit's still going on years later.
I wanted to come back for a second because you mentioned something, and every time I see this in the paper, my jaw drops. But if you were talking about the Swiss billionaire, I mean, I think that most people are surprised, as I'll speak for myself, I'm surprised to find that a Swiss billionaire is able to push this much money into the American political system. Who is it? Again, you could just, who is it? Mm-hmm. And how is that possible that he's allowed to affect U.S. politics like this?
Well, his name is Hans-Jürg Wyss. He's now in his 80s. He ran a biomedical company for many years. That's where the money comes from. And one of the ways that he's able to do this is two things. One, the C4 nonprofits like League of Conservation Voters and whatnot, they can take money from foreign nationals under our existing law, and they can turn around and give it to super PACs, which, of course, is directly playing in politics. Now, Wyss is such an interesting character that he did something that is legal, but he did something some years ago that's totally illegal. He wrote personal checks straight to PACs and whatnot, including, by the way, speaking of the Supreme Court, friends of Dick Durbin, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee this morning as we're talking. Now, unfortunately, the statute of limitations expired before he got caught, But you can go in the FEC, you know, donor database and see the thousands of dollars he handed out to various folks. He also gave it to one of the Udalls who was in Congress, and he gave it to Inslee when he was in Congress. Now Inslee, of course, is governor of Washington. So he's really a piece of work. But the other bigger answer is campaign finance reform, right? Which is the left's answer to all things money. Okay. Well, guess what? It squeezes money out of the proper, it squeezes political money out of the proper political channels, which would be parties and candidates that you can hold directly accountable for things, right? You can change party, you can campaign against a candidate. It squeezed money out of there, and that helps to explain why there's so many billions of dollars going into nonprofits like the Arabella World, because there it doesn't touch any of those guys. It doesn't keep the Ford Foundation from paying for voter registration, for instance.
Right. Can you tell us, so you mentioned something about before fixing the court, what kind of progress are they? Well, I guess another way to ask that is, let's say, let's say that they wind up, the Democrats wind up controlling the White House in 2024, the White House, the Senate, and the Congress, the different things that we've seen on their wish list, whether it is packing the court, whether it's turning D.C. and Puerto Rico into states. Where do you think we are right now on this? And is it just the fact that that Republicans were able to hold the line on some of these things in 2020 and 2022? So what do you think 2024 looks like in a nightmare scenario like that?
Yes, the first thing I should say is my crystal ball is glass dust. So I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm a C3, so that limits what I can say about it. On the other hand, your nightmare scenario is certainly within the realm of possibility. Demand justice is one of the biggest pounders on the table for court packing, and for even more, right? For crazy recusal, if they can't expand the court, right, then they want to shrink the court. What the last thing they want to do is allow the court to function in our constitutional system the way it's supposed to. But yes, a question to you, Lee, do you know anybody who predicted the Biden administration would be as radical in policy as it has been? I didn't think it would be, and I don't know anybody who thought it would be.
Well, I did. Yeah, I did, actually, not to boast too much. But yeah, I saw it as a continuation of the Barack Obama administration and on steroids, because Biden was serving as an avatar, which meant that no one would be held accountable for anything. And that's what's happened. No one has held Joe Biden. No one will ever be held accountable for anything, whether that's opening the borders, whether that's crushing our domestic energy industry, whether it's sending billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine, whether it's hurting traditional American allies like Israel, like Saudi Arabia. So I actually am not surprised at all. And that's why I'm concerned in 2024. I know a lot of people are not expecting it, but what happens with a Biden victory? What happens with these different organizations like Arabella Advisors? Are they supercharged as well? Do they get a new gust of wind behind their back that lead them to ever new perversely progressive initiatives?
You made a good point there about how the Biden administration has been the Obama administration on steroids. And a second term, when Biden doesn't have to worry about facing voters again, who knows what would happen in your nightmare scenario. I heard a joke the other day that the Biden administration and family, the administration makes Obama look moderate and the family makes Clinton look honest.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good line. Well, what are the different ways heading into the election? We've only got a minute or so left, but I want to ask Scott, what are the different ways that you and your group are, not only unveiling what different groups like Arabella are up to, but how are you setting the table for the 2024 election? What are you guys up to?
Well, we're covering all this as thoroughly as we can. Let me throw out a website that's valuable.
Please.
We run something called influencewatch.org, influencewatch.org. It is essentially a Wikipedia of the left online. And every group I've mentioned, you can go there and spend hours digging into it. It documents, you know, we have a rule. We don't say anything if we can't document it. And if you look on Influence Watch, you'll be amazed at all that we've documented.
Well, there's something that I certainly want to look into, and I wish we had more time to go into it, but I may talk to you at a future date about Mark Elias, and I'm curious to know what your sense of his role heading into 2024 is. Actually, if you have a minute, if you can just hit on it very quickly.
Yeah, it's super easy. Hey. Guess who is Arabella's lawyer, Mr. Elias? Guess who runs all of his C3 and C4 money through Arabella? Mark Elias.
All right. Not surprising. I am going to talk to you more about this later. In the meantime, Scott Wolter, I want to thank you so much for being here with us today. And I want to congratulate you again on Arabella. Just out from Encounter Book. Go out and get it. Arabella, the Dark Money Network of Leftist Billionaires, Secretly Transforming America, by Scott Wolter, who has honored us with his presence today, talking about his book, talking about the group, talking about the 2024 election. Scott, thank you so much again. God bless you. And thanks to all of you for watching. We'll see you in the next episode of Words That Matter. I'm your host, Lee Smith.
You look across the world at the cleanest countries, the countries that are reducing pollution and carbon emissions the most. And it's the countries that actually have the freest economies. Sure. Because in those places, you can afford to make the environmental decision because it's more cost effective, because it creates jobs, because it boosts the economy. We cannot ask people to pay more, to do more, to change their life for the sake of the environment. Americans and people across the world are struggling with much more pressing concerns. Bringing more manufacturing and mining and energy production back to the United States, farming as well. We do it better in the United States. We do it cleaner in the United States than any other country. So we need to be pursuing those sorts of energy solutions. And we also need to be implementing common sense conservation practices. Farmers, ranchers, foresters are some of the best conservationists in the world. They're the original conservationists. They have a stake in protecting the environment that they have their livelihoods from. And equipping them with the tools to be able to actually manage the forests, to be able to actually farm efficiently, to actually be able to provide the food that we need efficiently.
I want to get a sense of what people on the left are saying when you're engaging with them, and people on the right. Benji Backer, author of the just published The Conservative Environmentalist. Please make sure to make the jump with us to Epoch TV, continuing this great conversation.